bam 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 bam. Hey everybody, welcome to Go Help Yourself, a comedy self-help podcast to make life suck less. My name is Misty Stinnett, and I am joined by a very special guest this episode. But before we get into that, let me orient you for a moment. This is the podcast where we explore anything and everything self-help. We have book reviews, we have special guests, we have authors, we have trivia, anything and everything that is self-help, we're diving in, kind of whether we want to or not. And it is a journey, and we're so glad you're here with us on this journey. But today, I am tackling a subject that I have wanted to tackle for years, but it has felt way too big to do it on my own, and I wanted to bring in an expert. So today, my friends, longtime loyal listeners, brand new selfies, we are talking about the Enneagram. And I am joined today, not by Lisa Linke, our consummate, inimitable co-host, but by special guest, Matt Oren. Matt, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks. I love the podcast.
Thank you.
I love what you both are up to, and I'm happy to be here. I'm really passionate about the Enneagram.
Oh my God. I am so excited to dive into this. I feel like there's no one better to walk us through what the Enneagram is and how it can benefit us. So before we dive in, I'm going to tell everybody a little bit about Matt Oren. As a coach and thought partner for founders and CEOs, Matt combines his 20-year career as an executive, facilitator, and investor with a passion for supporting leaders of evolutionary businesses. Matt co-founded Evolution to partner with companies to fulfill their purpose as iconic, world-enriching entities, and currently serves as managing director. He has worked with Slack, Snapchat, Notion, Radiology Partners, Coursera, Crosscut Ventures, NVA, Glassdoor, Scopely, Density, Wink, and Kleiner Perkins, among many others. Matt has been trained and mentored by luminaries in the field of organization development, such as Peter Block, Chris Worley, and Edie and Charles Seashore, and continually learns and integrates current thinking into his coaching practice, such as neuroleadership and mindfulness. As an author, Matt has published articles in both academic peer-reviewed journals as well as trade magazines such as Training and Development. He holds a master's degree in organization development from Pepperdine University, where his thesis research was focused on building trust in teams. Okay, so all of that incredible intro is kind of a way to say that you are an executive coach and you founded this amazing company, Evolution, that helps teams thrive.
Yes, a little bit of a background. Evolution is a coaching firm that supports founders and leaders in businesses. We have 150 clients. Mm. We have 40 full-time coaches that are partners, and we exist to help leaders learn about themselves and grow in their roles, understanding that, you know, many of the folks listening will understand that if, when you take a bigger role on, you grow in an organization or a business, it really challenges things about who you are as a person, and it forces you to learn about your own internal operating system and some of the behaviors and skills that maybe might be outmoded. And so what we do is we support people one-on-one, as well as teams and in organizations as a whole, through developing programs for their leadership development, manager development, to help the organization scale and the individual leader scale. And we've been around for about 10 years. We work a lot in tech and startups. We also invest in our clients and have a way to invest in them as a way of acknowledging that we believe in what they're doing long-term, and also run events. So we have Enneagram circles, what we're going to talk about today, and other forms of group coaching, meditation events, Leadership with Wolves. We have an excursion to Kenya that's happening next year.
Wow.
That people can participate in as well. And wow. So, yeah, it's really great. And our topic today is about the Enneagram, which is a tool that we use. It's one of the primary tools that we use to help leaders grow. And we love it. It's very applicable for a leadership role, but it's also really helpful as a human as well, and helps in your personal life. So,
I have to say, I was really intrigued and a bit surprised to hear that the Enneagram is one of your favorite tools to use with these high performing executive kind of leaders and tech companies, because when I was first introduced to the Enneagram, or a friend told me about it, it felt like it was like one of those more kind of like woo-woo tools, more spiritual tools. So can you tell me, why do you love the Enneagram so much, especially as a leadership tool?
Absolutely. And it is having its moment in the zeitgeist right now. I mean, if you look at, there was like something I was reading, like the Google searches for Enneagram since 2017 have just skyrocketed. I mean, it is all over the place. Brené Brown is talking about it. Churches are using it. One of the things you can do that is hilarious is search Bohemian Rhapsody, the Queen song, Enneagram. And there's this incredibly well-produced mega church song using the Enneagram, replacing the lyrics of Bohemian Rhapsody. And so it's just all over the place. And so some of that, I think, why people are using it in business is because it is being adopted in the mainstream in a way that it hasn't before. Because in the past, the Enneagram was like the thing that your friends that were really into personal growth did. Mm-hmm. Everybody kind of knew the Myers-Briggs or the Big Five, these other personality instruments.
Yeah.
And the Enneagram
was... what's the Big Five?
The Big Five are five key traits that they ascribe to certain people. Extroversion, agreeableness.
I've never heard of the Big Five. I've heard of like the five love languages, your Gallup-Clifton strengths, top five.
Yeah.
But this is... okay. Wow.
So if we back up a little bit, I think, and I'm going to kind of answer your question here, but I'm going to wind to it a bit. There's a thing called personality theory that says we are born with an inherent personality. And if you ever seen like a little baby, mm-hmm. you know, they're just born with these little personalities.
Yeah.
And it may be epigenetic. I mean, there's some theory that says that personalities exist in families and you can kind of follow them passed down through the generations. But either way, it doesn't really change. It's hard-coded from birth. And so there have been different tools that people have developed to try to understand this inherent construct that we have inside of us that guides how we show up and the behaviors that we choose and how people experience us.
Like astrology, human design.
Yeah. Well, astrology, I wouldn't really call a personality theory because that is based on the stars. Like your behavior is based on the stars, right? Personality is...
well, isn't it this idea that like where you were born sort of within space-time under the stars influences your personality? It's kind of like a backdoor personality theory.
I would say it may give clues to why you behave the way you do, but it is not, if we're going to be exact, a personality instrument, but it's useful. I mean, one of the things I'm going to say is the more you can learn about yourself, the more ways you can learn about yourself, the better. Yeah. And you can't just take one thing like the Enneagram or Myers-Briggs or astrology and say everything and use that as the filter for everything. You really have to, you know, the human being inside of us is this operating system that drives how we show up. And it's like a diamond. There's all these facets that include birth order and where you were born and what your culture is and your personality and trauma and, you know, what you were trained in your education. And so you have to hold it lightly and understand there's just so many lenses to use to understand human behavior.
Yeah, it's so complex.
So complex. And the reason we love the Enneagram is that it's an inside-out tool that really describes our internal motivations and drives, as well as our less helpful reactive patterns. That is incredibly applicable for relationship dynamics. If you're struggling in your relationship, it's so helpful at work or at home. Understanding how you get in your own way or your stress patterns. And as a tool, you know, when somebody comes in, and we'll meet with people just like a therapist does, we'll meet with them weekly, and they'll come in and they'll unpack a problem and they'll say, I'm struggling with this with this person that's on my team or my peer. And one of the things that we'll do when we help them kind of reflect and learn kind of about the accountability of how they may be impacting that is learning about the reactive patterns and parts of themselves that show up that really are stress driven and like where that comes from. And one of the really helpful places to look at is our personality. It just provides like a shortcut, if you will, to understanding ourselves as a tool for effectiveness in our daily lives and with other people.
So you find the Enneagram to be very accurate.
It's accurate. It's deeper. It's more holistic. It's more applicable and applied. You know, Myers-Briggs is another one that I'm also trained in, and people also love that tool. It's one of the oldest. It's based on Carl Jung's archetypes that were then adapted into these kind of four traits.
That's like the ENFJ or yes, the INTP exactly. or the, okay.
Exactly, which is useful, but it's also more kind of academic and conceptual. It's been like validated a lot academically, but the Enneagram, and you know, let's talk about it. We can in fact talk about your Enneagram type.
Oh boy.
And you like, it instantly it becomes like, wow, this is so useful. This is so helpful as a personal growth tool. And it's one of those things like guitar where it's easy to understand, but tough to master, but it is easy to understand. And so once you get into your type, the light bulb just goes off quickly, and people very quickly find a lot of utility in ways to improve their life. So
let's dive into what is the Enneagram and where did it start? How did we get here?
Ennea means nine and gram means written or drawn. And it is thousands of years old, allegedly, and it comes from many different traditions. In the 20th century, the basics, the foundations of the Enneagram started to be put together by two gentlemen, one George Gurdjieff, and then a psychiatrist named Carlo Naranjo. And Naranjo basically formed the Enneagram what we know today in the 70s. He took kind of like a lot of the different lines and brought them together. And that actually gained a lot of popularity with some Jesuit monks. And Naranjo was involved in the 70s in Berkeley and the personal growth, human potential movement. And that is why, as a tool, a lot of your friends, as I said, that are really into personal growth, you know, especially kind of years ago, it was really rooted in people that were doing a lot of meditation, personal growth. And so the tool, actually what it is, maybe I can explain it a little bit.
Please.
Is it says that we are born with a personality, and the Enneagram language is we have a primary type, and there's nine types. Mm-hmm. And the theory is we may have aspects of all nine types, but we have a spike. Like if you look at the Enneagram, you look it up online, it's like there, it looks, it's very this angular thing that has 9 points, and mm-hmm. you like spike over one primary type. Mm-hmm. You are born with that type. And that type has helpful aspects and less helpful aspects of it. And there's also levels of development, and there's a lot of depth. I mean, again, hard, easy to understand, hard to master. There's virtues, there's vices, there's holy motivations, there's patterns of stress, integration and disintegration. You don't need to learn any of that. What I say when you're learning the Enneagram, you go take the test, mm-hmm. you learn your basic type, you learn how you show up when you're great, when you're not so great, and some personal growth tips, and you're off. And it's really, really helpful.
Okay, so if I want to figure out what is my Enneagram type, what's this primary spike of my personality, how do I do that?
Yes, so if you look online and you say, you know, Google, take the Enneagram test, you're gonna see a number of links.
Which is legit.
Yeah, right. Which is legit. Well, there's a whole theory in the Enneagram that says just read about them and self-adopt.
Oh, and, interesting.
Which is very non-academic. But
it also feels very like mental load on me. Like if you said, here's 12 astrological signs and descriptions, try and figure out which one you are. So I'm a Sagittarius, mm-hmm. cusp of Scorpio. Mm-hmm. Surprise, there's a darkness there. Lots of Scorpios in my family, which makes sense. I don't know that I would land on Sagittarius. Like that's just a lot of work.
Right.
I don't like that.
Right.
I want to take a quiz and have something spit out at me.
Absolutely. The quiz accelerates the process. What I would say though, is any self-assessment test or quiz, all you're doing is asking and answering questions about yourself.
Right.
So you could also do that by reading a book about the types too. Mm-hmm. I'm a bit of an iconoclast, and I would say, part of the beauty of the Enneagram is you have to walk the final mile and choose your type.
Yep.
Which
I was surprised by.
Yeah. But there's an ethical thing there where it's like, you can't just passively take the test and be like, great, that's what I am. The test told me I'm that. It's like, that's mm-hmm. actually not a place of empowerment. That's not a place of of life. I think the thing is like the test will give you a pointer to who you are. And then we'll talk a little bit about how you actually figure out your type.
Okay. So what website or test do you recommend to kind of start the assessment process?
Right. So I would go to the Enneagram Institute.
Okay.
And there's a button that says take the test and you click that. And then there's two types. You say the one that you want to take is called the READI, R-H-E-T-I.
Mm.
You really can't, it's not that hard to figure out, but you click on that. It costs $12. It'll take you about 45 minutes and you will be faced with a pair of questions that you have to choose.
Is it really 45 minutes? I feel like, okay, so I did the test with Matt and then we kind of went through that whole process, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. I feel like it maybe took me like 20 minutes, 25.
It can take 20 to 25 minutes. I would set aside 30 to 45 minutes just in case.
Right, if you really, and some of those questions are really like, oh God, is it A or B? Like it could go kind of both ways.
And there's an important piece with that too. When you take it, you want to use your instinct and you're going to be faced with these question pairs and it's like, are you this or are you this?
Oh God.
And
I'm multifaceted and complex, right. And I cannot be contained in a dichotomous test.
You don't want to dwell. You just want to choose with your gut. And you just want to, the one that you might be a little bit more of, it might be like, I'm not really either. Still use your gut. The test is designed to hone in. It repeats itself. So if there's one that doesn't speak to you, you just want to move through it. Yeah. I don't want to say quickly, but you want to be instinctive.
I think that's why the test took me less time than 45 minutes. Cause I was like, I literally was like, A, I guess, B, I guess, you know, it was like this kind of rapid fire thing, but it was fun.
Right. Then you get an email and the email has your top three types. It'll give you your scores across all nine types, but your top three types, they will give you a full rundown of all three types.
Mm-hmm.
There is a 70% chance that you are one of those top three types. And
wow. So there's a 30% chance that you just totally got it wrong.
There is a longer version of the test that you can take. That's like 3 hours that will hone in even
3 hours.
3 hours. Yeah.
Do you ever give your clients that long version of the test?
No, we don't. The process. So you get the report and you then want to read all three types and you want to choose which one is most like you. And generally speaking, it will ring like a bell and it is one of those top three. And you're like, that's me. Mm-hmm. Everything may not apply and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, again, you can't reduce yourself just to a personality type. And of course you're different in different environments.
Yeah.
The key is choosing just one. One of the big mistakes people make with the Enneagram is they're like, oh, and they're again numbered, right? So you'll hear people say, I'm a 1, I'm a 9, I'm a 7. You can't be a 2 and a 3, or I'm a 4 with a little 2. You're just one.
I'm going to pause here for a second to clarify, and maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but I got my test results back and read through the three types. And again, we'll cover a little bit about each type in a minute, but you talked about wings. So I got my type, which was a type 3. I'm a 3. And really, I remember reading through 3 and 7 and I was like, oh boy, there's a lot of similarities between these.
Because I thought you were a 7 originally.
You did think I was a 7. And 7 sound like they're great hangs. And so I can understand.
Which you are.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. I can understand why we both were like, ooh, am I a 7? But ultimately, I think I'm a 3. And I think as we spoke more, it became clear that I am a 3, but you were like, you have a 2 wing.
Right.
So what does it mean to have a wing? Because you just said you can't be more than 2 types. So what does that mean?
Yes. I just want to say, if you have trouble choosing one when you read it, and I'm going to talk about the wing just in a second, you can share it with somebody that knows you really well, a spouse, a close friend, a coworker,
a sibling.
They will generally read it and be like, oh yeah, that's you.
Yeah.
And if
you wish you were a 7, but you're a 3, right. My friend.
And if you really get stuck, then you can reach out to us at Evolution or somebody that knows the Enneagram really well. But generally speaking, that process works. You just want to get to the point where you kind of claim your type, because then you can dive into learning about it. Now, there is, again, easy to learn, tough to master, more dimensionality to the Enneagram. And mm-hmm. what the wings are in the nine types, again, if you look at it online and you can kind of see the Enneagram, it looks like a circle. You take on the qualities of the type to either side, like an airplane wing. Mm-hmm. So you can't be like a nine with a five wing. You're a nine with a one wing or an eight wing. In your case, you're a three with a two wing or a four wing, and you take on the qualities of the wing. Now,
in what situations?
All situations. Some people actually present as their wing. So in your case, you present a lot as a two. You're really warm. You're really helpful. You're other oriented.
Also codependent.
Right. The part of you that like subsumes your own needs for other people. Very caring. But that isn't your core type, because when we unpack what really motivates you, and when we look at like what you were like when you were 20, and we think about like when you wake up every day, like what a good day is for you, they're absolutely, and also the internal mechanisms that are maybe less helpful or painful, you're a three.
Because the Enneagram addresses both like your strengths and your shadow.
Yes.
Right? Like your strengths and like how you are when you're activated. And then the other thing that, you know, during my assessment that we spoke about is like, there's this idea of here's what the type is, kind of unrefined. It's raw materials. This is what you can expect from, for example, a three. But if you're a person who's done a ton of work on themselves and you're a bit more integrated, an integrated three, or someone who's just like addressed their reactivity in some way, it can soften.
Yes.
Some of those things.
There, you'll read the descriptions, and some of the things that may not stand out to you are because you may have transcended it. If you've done a lot of therapy and a lot of introspection, for instance, threes are great performers. They have a lot of personas. They're super charming. They're very competitive. They seek to be seen as efficient and effective and competent in every arena they are. They love looking good.
Oops.
Is that you? Right.
But then you layer in imposter syndrome and you're like, oh God.
Well, threes are also driven by a core of shame. They're only as good as their last win. They are
like, that's how I knew I was a three.
Yeah.
The core of shame. Because we thought I might have been a seven, but they have more of a relationship with fear.
And anxiety. Yes.
And anxiety. Well, wait a second, because I have a lot of, not to brag, but I have like a lot of anxiety.
Yeah. It doesn't mean that you don't. We look at like what are the core drivers of why you show up the way you do. And, you know, for a three, it is about being seen as competent and being effective in the world. Mm-hmm. And what drives that is the sense of my value comes from winning and from achieving. And you might feel anxious, you might feel angry, there's a lot of other emotions, but there is a relationship with shame that twos, threes, and fours have, actually, and shame and sorrow. And what I want to say about that is, going back to the wings, you don't need to learn the wing immediately. That is something that only shows up in the test if it's very strong. You want to work with somebody that knows the Enneagram or read the wing types to assess it, but your first task is just your primary type.
Are you willing to walk us through the headline of each of the nine types? What is a one? Is a one a good hang?
Yeah, any of them are good hangs. There's another common misperception is that there's good and bad types, or that you can be in a certain job with a certain type. None of that is true. You have CEOs that are eights and threes and ones, and you know, ones can be fun and sixes can be fun, anything. So,
well, hold on real quick. That brings up something for me. Side note, you coach a lot of CEOs and you and Evolution have helped some really well-known companies become who they are today.
Yes.
And some really well-known tech leaders become who they are today. Are there any Enneagram types that you see in those like super high performers more commonly than others?
No.
Okay. I love that answer.
Yes. It's really important to know that that doesn't, what I would say though, the reason I paused is startups in particular, which we work with, attract certain personality types. There's a lot of sevens. There's a lot of threes. There's a lot of eights. It doesn't mean that there isn't other types. Just like software engineering or being a physician, you might attract different types. But, you know, physicians can be any types, just like a CEO could be any types. Right. And so sometimes you see industries or even organizational cultures attract certain Enneagram types. And you can actually type companies' cultures.
Whoa. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm sorry, but that's blowing my mind. Have you ever done something where you're like, oh, this organization is a six?
Yes. A lot of times it's the overlay of the founder or the CEO.
Because it permeates the culture.
Exactly. Exactly. And the shadow side of the six and the positive side of the six. Exactly. But it's really important. You don't pigeonhole. I mean, there's this old story about Northrop Grumman. They had like everybody's Myers-Briggs on their cube wall and you'd walk up and then that became your filter. And oh, well, he's an INFJ. And it's like, you can't do that, which is also why you can't use it as a tool to hire a VP of operations. Like, you know, you may want to think about your team and a great team. The teams that I've worked with have really balanced personalities on them. That may be something that you're like, oh, I really like that person because they bring balance to the team, but you cannot use it as a bias, right?
Right. Thank you for naming that. Okay. What are the types?
The nine types.
Yeah. All right,
here we go. So you've taken your test. You've read your top three. You've chosen. Maybe you've shared it with somebody that you know. Maybe you have a hunch about your wing. Maybe you don't. Again, you don't have to know that. It is useful to know the other types because you'll start understanding other people and it will help you understand your own type. So primary type, one of the nine. The types, the nine, are grouped into triads: head, heart, and instinct or gut.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And so what that means is those types use that as their initial mechanism for filtering reality. In each of those triads, there is one type that externalizes that triad. So thinking, feeling. There's one that internalizes it, and there's one that disconnects. So I'll use that as a way to understand the types as we walk around the circle. It may actually be useful for you to Google the Enneagram and then like click on images and look at a template of the Enneagram. And maybe we can share that after the fact. We can kind of look at them. Yeah. So, okay. So if we look at the feeling triad, twos, threes, and fours.
So it starts with feeling.
It
doesn't start with one.
Well, it starts with one. We could start with one, but I just think it's kind of tidy to start with a triad. One is part of the instinct triad. So if we
Which is like 891.
891, yeah.
That's really interesting. Okay. That's
so we'll come back to that. We'll just start with two to just kind of cleanly start with the feeling triad. The numbers, sometimes you'll hear their names. And so the two is called commonly the helper. Mm-hmm. We've talked a little bit about this. So it's like very caring, other oriented, relationship oriented, gives of themselves. Also, their shadow side, right? The parts of themselves they hide, repress, and deny, less helpful parts. They martyr themselves. They overgive to the point of burnout. They don't speak up, ask for what they need. Really hard for them to self-advocate. Yeah. They can be kind of territorial and manipulative. And their value comes from being needed as a helpful person. They're like teddy bears, though. You go out to dinner with them and they like ask you all the questions and they're just like...
Well, it also just makes me think of like a nurse.
Yes.
Or a teacher.
My mom, the second grade teacher, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Or like anyone kind of in a helping profession.
Social workers, teachers, exactly. Again, not all of them are twos, but I think archetypally you could say that. And I'll talk a little bit about how like gender shows up because a lot of women in our culture are socialized as twos.
Even if that's not their type.
No.
Sorry, real quick. Does your Enneagram type ever change?
No.
You're like born with it. So if I took the test in my 20s, my 30s, my 50s.
Yeah.
All the same.
I'll give an example. Women that are eights, the challenger, which is strong, loves making impact in the world, into control and loyalty, central casting, CEO kind of general types. Women are eights as well. But in the work world, when a woman is strong or loud or gives very direct feedback, like eights love to do, they will be socialized out of that and socialized towards two behavior. So women will actually get tested as twos when they're really eights. And so that's...
Why can't everyone chill out and just let us be eights? Yeah. Here's my direct feedback. get over it. Yeah. Deal with, do your own work.
Right.
Because we would never be like, this man is being too direct. Exactly. He needs to say, hey, just a thought, just brainstorming here. Like, no, we know what we mean.
Right. Versus this is what I think. And then boom, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why when I'm working with someone that might be a little stuck, one of the questions I'll ask is, what were you like when you were 20? Or what were you like? How would your best friends describe you? Because it unpacks the layering of culture that can occlude who a person really is.
Right. So we've got this number two.
Right.
The helper. Number threes, which are the best, obviously.
Which threes, of course, think they're the best.
Okay, I don't think we're the best.
Oh, well,
I'm like, why can't I be like the really chill, what's the surfer chill Enneagram type?
Can we just say at a very meta level, you just showed up like a three? Because threes want to be the best, but they would never want you to think that they want to be the best.
Oh my God.
So it's like,
because this was go help yourself. This, we're ending the episode now.
It's like, I don't want you to think that about me, but it's true. Right. And I was doing a workshop once and I complimented a three and wearing a suit coat, another three raised their hand. They're like, you know what? You know how I know I'm a three? When you said that, like, my first thought that I would never share is, why didn't I wear my coat today? It's incessant. But threes, we're very competitive, but we're not. Threes and eights get mistyped a lot because they can be very intense. They're very industrious. They love to get things done. They can be super focused.
Mm-hmm.
Threes are kind of like shocked and horrified when people tell them they have sharp elbows because they would never want to have a negative impact on another person.
That's right.
But they're just being like a missile, like super focused on their goal, or they have these blinders on or whatever.
Or also, and this is where I get a little bit confused, and I'll just go on a very short digression here. I'm a Sagittarius as well.
Right.
And a manifesting generator and an ENFJ. Please don't steal my identity, anyone who is listening. But like, being a Sagittarius, there's this really blunt directness, you know, and this impatience. But I'm also a three, and I have this two wing, which is this like I just desire to help so much, and I will subvert my own needs for other people. So it's this really complicated thing. So this is just all to say, I can understand why it's helpful to have a professional coach when discussing your Enneagram, and like, how do we parse out all these layers? Not only from a personal growth perspective, but if I'm a manager trying to understand my team better, if I'm hiring somebody, if I'm getting a 360 review at work, how do we know how much weight to give each of these self-perception tools?
That's a great question. And you are the one to answer that, which filter you want to look at yourself through, because I think it's a great point. Sagittarius, manifest generator, three with a two wing. Here's the way that I cut through all that though. And this is why I feel like a bit of this is like my four wing, right? Iconoclast. Put all that aside and just ask yourself the question, what is happening inside of me? What am I feeling? What is that driving in terms of how I want to show up? What can I learn about myself? What internal adjustments can I make around my beliefs? Like, for instance, if you're a three, maybe it's like, can I in this moment find value in not being productive? Can I have a morning off and just be with myself? Now, maybe you need to use the three, but you also don't need to get in your head about that. You can also just self-assess and drop into your body and listen and make the decision from that place. And I think some part of your coding has that Enneagram as a filter, but the more you learn about it, let it fall away and just ask yourself questions and learn about yourself and make it from that place.
Thank you. Okay. So if two is the helper, three is
the achiever.
Okay.
As we've said, it is the middle of every triad. Remember, twos are externalizing feelings. Threes disconnect from feelings because they're efficient, effective, driven towards winning and charm and being seen as competent. They're one of the most conflict averse types. When they start to get into a reactive pattern, they can become evasive. Some would even use the word, it's a little harsh, like slippery. And it's not that they're not trustable. they go into this kind of like spin where they're trying to like manage impressions and they don't want the other person to feel bad. They don't want to look bad.
And by the way, I think like when I think about myself in this way, because like I hear this language and I feel a little bit defensive against mm-hmm. it, but because when I am being like evasive or slippery, which I do resonate with, it's not an intentional thing. It's right. coming from a place of like, I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Exactly. And I want to not call them back until I really understand how I'm feeling or like have a script for what I want to say. Like it's coming from a place of love. So for me, right. those behaviors resonate, but they feel softer.
Yeah. Or I don't want them to be mad, or I don't want them to have a, you know, I don't want them to be uncomfortable, or I'm afraid that I'm going to like look bad. So I'm just going to like shape the truth a little differently. And again, you know, whereas like eights, it's just like, they need to learn how to shape the truth a little differently because it's just, they lower the barrel and just shoot sometimes.
So it's like threes can almost like read the room yes, so well that exactly. they can adjust the message for yes. the person to hear it yes. while eights maybe lack that. Okay. So what's a four?
Okay. So the four is the individualist. The four is the most emo of all the types.
Thank you. We love you fours. You go out and you make music and you have cool hairstyles.
And they are, again, external, disconnect, internal. Fours are internally connected with their own feelings. They will just wallow in their emotions. They'll like listen to a piece of sad music for like 3 hours at a time. Threes like spin up.
See, I relate to that. Mm-hmm. I will play the same song for weeks.
While you're being incredibly productive, cleaning the house, getting things done.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you. Listen, he gets it. Hire him as your Enneagram coach.
Now, what I would say though about fours is, you know, threes spin up into action and effectiveness. Fours will just kind of like slow down, and they have this incredible capacity for emotion intensity.
What is that, their like superpower?
It is their superpower. Like they can hold, you could sit down with a four and just drop bombs and they will hang with you. They also,
you mean like emotional bombs? Emotional, like you could be bombs. Like, I'm sad about this person yes. who died, yes. or I'm worried about existentialism.
Or you can go to them when they're connected to themselves. They use that connection to their insides to be incredibly judicious and ethical.
Oh,
because it's like they have a sense of who they are. They also, unlike threes, don't really care about, they're just like, I'm feeling broken today. And you're like, whoa, like that was a shocking admission in a meeting. But
that, see, I've done that too.
As a healthy three, you're learning how to, there's a, like a medicine for each type. Twos, self-care. Threes, exposing their core rot or their like less like helpful parts. Fours, getting outside of themselves and their own process. So each one, like I like to use that kind of language. There's a core medicine. And so because you've learned and you've grown, you've done a lot of work, you have learned how to just be vulnerable and express parts of yourselves that are less kind of shiny to look at, which is really important for threes to do.
Okay. And I would say, speaking of reading the room, careful who you're saying that to. And in what context? Because sometimes people are like, wow, that really made me feel close to you and feel seen and humanized you. And then other times it's like, just not the right right environment. Okay, so what's the headline for the four? Like not the emo.
The individualist.
The individualist. Okay.
The creative.
Cool.
Right. And okay. so temperamental, but also highly creative, highly expressive, in tune with emotions. Then we get to the five, which is at the start of the thinking triad. I like to say the bottom of the Enneagram, again, if you're looking at the image, the fours and fives have the most intense karma. For better or worse.
Fours and fives?
Fours and fives.
Wow.
Fours have the most intense karma emotionally, fives intellectually. So this is where we can kind of use different celebrities or people that we know. And when we think about fives, it's like the archetypal software engineer that just like lock me in a room, like in the dark, and let me code for hours and do deep work.
So five, six, seven, you said is the thinking triad.
Right.
And so five would be
internal focused on thinking. Yes.
Internal focused on thinking. Six would be
disconnected.
And then seven
external
is
external ideas. Okay. Ideas. Yeah.
Okay.
And so fives, the positive is they like put puzzle pieces together. Like there's this joke about fives. They like, they will literally work for 2 weeks and forget to shower and not take care of their own bodily needs.
See, I relate to that too.
Well, we have parts of all of ourselves and all the different Enneagram types.
That's right.
Fives are one of the more rare types. when they're healthy, again, they use these ideas to kind of like create patterns and systematic patterns in the world. When they're less helpful, they can be like disconnected from reality, very stubborn, paranoid. We think of people like Edgar Allan Poe and Einstein, like,
or a beautiful mind.
Beautiful mind, like, John Nash. That mm-hmm. is exactly, that's the archetype of the five, right?
Okay. What's a six?
So the six is called the loyalist. Sometimes that's the word. Sixes are like glue-like. They are the most anxiety prone, risk aware. They use risk as an assessment, just like other types would use other things, because they're mm-hmm. really cared about the people and the whole, and how the sense of safety that exists in a system with people. They're very cautious. Doesn't mean they don't think, but they're disconnected from their thinking, because again, they're pinging the human system, all the different people, and how everyone's doing. They're also very peaceable. The reason they call the loyalists is they're like, it is like being around the best friend. They're like very there. They're again, their affect is in the head. Way different than like a warm-hearted two or a three. You'll notice the Enneagram expresses it through your affect, but they're very reliable. They're the hub of the wheel. They're the glue on the team. They're dependable. They're super humble. They're another type that does not care about showing up in a way that's not great.
God, they sound lovely.
They're lovely people. Twos and sixes get mistyped a lot but then that's when you get into the motivation for the two is different than the motivation for the six.
Because the motivation for the two is like, I want to be helpful, yes. useful. That's how I define myself.
Right.
In the six,
it is safety and balance. Yes.
I bet I have a bunch of sixes in my life, but like they sound fantastic.
They're incredible. You'll notice that they lean back a little bit, kind of from an affect standpoint. You'll just notice them like cautiously probing questions around like, well, what about this? And what about this?
Mm-hmm.
Sixes with seven wings are sunnier. Sixes with five wings tend to be a little bit more what you would call introverted, but I would just say kind of less effusive.
Or like brooding?
A little bit more brooding. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. A little quieter. Because the seven is the enthusiast, and the seven is like the classic early stage entrepreneur. They are the most positive. They're, again, threes with two wings get mistyped to sevens a lot, because sevens like are very sunny and bright. They're the most pain averse, to the point of they can lapse into addiction because they avoid any bad feelings. They get a dopamine hit every time they have a new idea. They are obsessed with new things,
mm-hmm.
and they are great sprinters, but bad marathoners. They are great starters, but they're bad finishers.
Great. Okay. So they can like start to generate lots of ideas, start a business.
They're idea machines. Exactly.
So if you're listening and you're an entrepreneur and you're an early stage entrepreneur, it sounds like you would want to hire someone on your team, maybe a COO, who's like really good at finishing things. Absolutely. Or you want to partner with a romantic partner that's like, oh great, I love to see every detail all the way through.
Right.
You decide where we go for vacation, you dream it all up, and then I'll execute.
Exactly. My co-founder, Jeff, is a seven. And one of I support him in two ways. He spins himself up with lots of ideas and lots of excitement, but sevens spin themselves up and then they spin themselves down and they become there. If you look at the Enneagram, there's arrows that talk about how the types relate to each other. Mm-hmm. This is an aside.
Mm-hmm.
They take on the healthy qualities of another type when they're healthy. They take on the less healthy qualities of another type. So sevens disintegrate into the five. They can become a little paranoid. A red pen comes out. They become
loner. Nobody can do it the way I can.
Right.
Do
they just obsess over details. They get like all spun out and brittle. And so the medicine, a lot of for the seven, is to simplify and ground. And I just will watch Jeff, like his whole body relaxes when I'm like, let's just focus on this one thing. And then all of a sudden, because seven's this and this and this, and it's all so exciting. We can do this and this. And you will just notice the sevens are so excitable.
Yeah.
But they have trouble and they need structure around them to essentially ground, and also learn how to dwell and be with feelings that are less comfortable, like sadness. Fours love sadness. They don't care.
They feel aligned.
They're fine. Yeah. You know, eights can just live with anger. It's like no big deal. Sevens will avoid everything but positivity and enthusiasm.
And you said earlier that they have more of a relationship with fear than with shame.
Yeah. Yes.
So they don't, does that mean they don't feel as much shame?
They may feel shame, but it is less present. Five, sixes, and sevens all have a relationship with fear. Just like twos, threes, and fours all have a relationship with shame, or some people that believe the Enneagram say sorrow. You will notice this anxiety behind sevens that is there, whereas you'll notice a bit of a sadness or a tenderness or a shame with threes and twos. And a lot of times when I'm typing people, I will use their affect to that end to land it when they're stuck.
Right, land the plane. When it comes to a co-founder relationship, like you were saying, your co-founder, Jeff, can generate all these ideas and get like super spun up about things. You're three. So does that mean that you guys kind of balance each other out by like you're able to execute and finish more?
I am a very industrious three. I have a massive capacity, my ability to get things done. I am also an ENFP, and what, if you know the Myers-Briggs, N's are very conceptual and future oriented. P's are very dynamic and last minute. I am also a manifest generator, and I am into ideas as well. So threes with two wings are also very entrepreneurial. So threes with two wings will get mistyped as sevens a lot.
Right.
Their drive for why they want to be entrepreneurial is slightly different, but a 3-7 combination can be very prolific because they're both idea generators.
And all the time.
All the time. And it doesn't mean that sevens can't execute, but there is a balance there because threes are really good at getting stuff done.
Right.
Sevens are great about like architecting plans and how the things fit together. Right. And whereas threes are just like, so yes, but especially three with two wings, especially, you know, NPs, you're going to find threes actually in Enneagram language are one of the more entrepreneurial types as well.
Mm.
And in fact, any type again can be an entrepreneur. Let's just be clear. It's not just threes and sevens.
That's right.
So now we get to the instinct triad, eights, nines, and ones. Eights, internally focused on instinct, right? Sometimes I kind of talk about famous people. Richard Branson, seven, right?
Richard Branson's a seven?
Yeah. Classic, you know, seven when you think about that. Actually,
do a lot of sevens have their own islands?
They would get really excited about having their own island. I'll tell you that.
But they couldn't finish signing the paperwork.
Exactly. It'd be half finished. So eights are the challenger, and when eights are healthy, they have really warm, tender hearts. Somebody told me once that like when you're coaching an eight, you know you got them when you finally see them tear up, right? Because they just have these big, tender hearts. They have this largesse. They put their arms around everybody. You know, the eight with the nine wing, all the wing types, by the way, have names, and the eight with the nine wing is called the bear. Because they're...
Wait, what's a three with a two wing called?
I think it's called the charmer.
Oh, you guys.
Right?
Could that be?
I'm kidding. There's different names. I don't have all the wing types memorized, and then they change them. But it describes that nature of the eight and the eight. But the eight, when they're less helpful, can be scary. Very, very not making a political statement here, but a very unhealthy eight is Donald Trump. Okay, all I'm saying is rage tweeting in the middle of the night and try, because what eights will do is when they're thrown, they'll try to like draw back. They'll pull back from the world because they're obsessed with control and loyalty to reconstitute their internal authority. And they're very vengeful and almost kind of like rageful. But the beautiful thing about eights and anger is like, they'll just like get into it and then it's just gone. And then as a three, we're like, what? That was,
we're like, oh God.
And that was horrible.
We're resonating with shame for days.
Right.
Yeah. Wait, so what, can you think of an example of a healthy eight?
Yes. Martin Luther King. Right.
Oh my, wait, whoa, that spectrum is bananas.
Exactly. And we will definitely share that, you know, healthy eight, Madeleine Albright. I mean, there's lots of other famous healthy eights.
So it is about doing your inner work.
Absolutely. Eights, when they're healthy, are so powerful. They can run through walls. They're just like, they have incredible capacity. Again, eights and threes getting mistyped, right? Because eights just like, they're able to get a lot of stuff done. They're into impact. They're great leaders. They engender loyalty. Eights with seven wings, I think that's the wing type is called the Maverick. They'll just use kind of the entrepreneurial seven and like the power of the eight. They're very powerful people and they have a lot of personal power. They're like center of gravity is like low in their body. But again, no good or bad types. Every types have helpful and less helpful types. Famous nines, Mother Teresa, Nelson Mandela, it sits at the top. It's called the peacemaker. They're into peace and harmony orchestration, disconnected from instinct. So at times they can feel, it's kind of like, where are you? Where's your back and your integrity? They can like cede a lot of their decisions and power to someone else, an external person. But when they're healthy, they're able to bring broad coalitions together very powerfully because they're super fair and super kind of grounded in like the good for all.
Right? Wow.
And especially the peacemaker, when you think about the one, so like a nine with a one wing, the one is called the reformer. Ones are justice oriented. They're into right and wrong. They can be binary in good ways and bad ways. They can get very brittle about accountability and right and wrong. The one integrates to the seven when they're healthy. So they can see the way to build a more just world.
To the seven?
Yeah. The ones integrate to the seven when they're less healthy, when they disintegrate, this is Enneagram language, integrate, disintegrate, they disintegrate to the less helpful qualities of the four and they become really brittle. They kind of become like toxically accountable and they use accountability as a weapon. I had a friend that was a one that you're supposed to, he was at a personal growth retreat. Instead of writing like a thank you letter, there was like a letter to yourself in the future. He instead wrote a letter of all the people that had wronged him over the last 15 years.
Oh boy.
They remember every minor slight, like in a Larry David, like kind of way.
Oh my God.
But they're also very peaceful and humble. And when they're in a good space, like you can go to them and trust their judiciousness because they seek to find what is good in the world. And so you can imagine an eight or a nine, for instance, with a one wing, very powerful, you know, people that are out there trying for social justice and, you know, a character like Mandela, et cetera. So ones externalize their sense of instinct into codes of justice and right and wrong. They're external, focused on instinct. And so those are the nine types.
Wow. This is just an incredible crash course in the Enneagram. And thank you for walking us through this. Like I said at the beginning, like this is a massive topic that I just didn't feel like I could do justice to it on my own. And I'm so grateful that you've taken the time to share with us like what they are and how this can be useful. And for anybody who wants to get coaching with you or who wants to use, and I know you do so much more at Evolution Coaching than just the Enneagram, but I do know that this is a powerful tool. So for anybody who wants to get in touch with you for coaching, team building, psychological safety, offsites, or Enneagram stuff, where can they find you?
They can find us at evolution.team. That is www.evolution.team.
Thank you for the www. And this will all be in show notes. It's
when we first started doing that, evolution.team, people are like, wait, is that a domain name? You can use .team. And
yeah. And like T-E-A-M.
Yeah. And so.
Yeah. But you forgot the https://. Yeah.
Thank you.
No one's going to get it if you don't say that.
Right. People that are experienced internet users that listen to the show. So
yeah. What is the internet?
The internets.
Oh, the internets. Right. Oh yes, of course.
Right. That's what my mom calls it. Internets.
Aww. That's so sweet.
This is a plural thing.
Okay, so one of the reasons you may not have heard of Evolution Coaching before is because, as Matt has told me, they're kind of a mystery brand, which I didn't realize is a thing in business. You guys are kind of operating in the shadows, making companies great without kind of being like, hey, companies come work with us. But you are so pervasive in the tech industry and just in helping people thrive. And I know that there are coaches on staff that specifically help like female leaders thrive. And I just think it's all incredible. And you mentioned you may have some Enneagram circles coming up and other offerings that people can join, even if you're not an executive tech leader. Is that right?
Absolutely. We have Enneagram circles where you can learn about your Enneagram type and process it and learn about how it's showing up in your life. All of our coaches are trained in the Enneagram. So one-on-one coaching is available that will use the Enneagram and other things.
Or team coaching.
I just did a session with a team based out of New York City where I typed everyone individually. We talked about how the team worked together via their Enneagram type. It was incredible and rich. And yeah, we would love to talk to you. We're really passionate about what we do and believe that business is a leverage point for change in the world. People do a massive amount of personal growth, if not the most of their personal growth at work. So we really almost like a kind of a sacred level of vow of supporting these leaders that are trying to improve themselves and their businesses. And the Enneagram is just a great tool. And, you know, we've got lots of events and different circles. We have a circle spinning up right now for gay men that are leaders. And so we're always having different kinds of cohorts and groups that are supporting different populations of folks. But the Enneagram groups, we do them quarterly, essentially, and happy to have anyone show up and join.
I love everything that you said. And the more I learn about evolution, the more it's just nice to realize that there are companies out there truly coming from like a heart-centered soul place, because it's like, yeah, it's tech and yeah, it's venture capital and it's all of these things, but it's about how can you help these leaders do the best work they can so that they can make impactful products and businesses in the world.
And meanwhile, I mean, we're really proud. We're carbon neutral. We give 1% of our profits to nonprofits. We give discounts for cause-based businesses. We do pro bono work. We worked with a partner with Slack to support folks that were formerly incarcerated that wanted tech jobs. We coached them as they were integrating back.
That's incredible.
So yeah, I mean, we're big. We're 40 partners and, you know, 150 plus clients. And we support all sorts of businesses. We support individual people too that just call us up and say, hey, I'd love a coach. And again, we're really passionate about what we do. So,
and as an extra special bonus, Matt is offering a 10% discount code for all listeners of Go Help Yourself. So if you go to www.evolution.team, the link is in show notes. It's just a flick and a press of your thumb away. If you go to the contact form and mention Go Help Yourself the podcast, you'll get a 10% discount on all services, including for your team. Yeah. So if you want your whole team overhauled, and again, not just the Enneagram, even though this was a fascinating podcast episode, but it's so much more. Do you need a 360 as a leader? Are you a product person coming up and you want individual coaching? Do you need some learning and development for your small business? Evolution's got you. Thank you so much for being here, Matt.
Thanks, Missy. It's been great.
And with that, life is abundant. Go Help Yourself was produced in Los Angeles by Misty Stinnett and Lisa Linke. Original music by Matt Sav. Please check out our new website at gohelpyourself.co or reach out to us at gohelpyourself@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. You're amazing. We love you. Goodbye.